Hello, everybody. Welcome to Meltdown Comics in Hollywood, California. Harmontown is now in session. Please welcome to the stage the mayor of Harmontown, Mr. Dan Harmon.
Thank you. Thank you for coming out. You're all wonderful. Let's figure everything out.
How are you, Dan? How are you doing?
I'm good. I just came from doing the treatment with Elvis Mitchell. Californians will know what I'm talking about. KCRW, Elvis Mitchell. Very, very wily and unexpectedly deep researcher in terms of his interviews. I don't know. I can't figure that guy out. Like, he was asking me questions about, like, comic books I wrote in the 90s. I don't know if he just... Is he... I couldn't... It was weird.
Weird how? Like, he'd done so much research?
Well, it was very insightful and asking strange questions that had never been asked and drawing... I had heard him interview people before. I always fantasized about being a guest of his, you know, kind of like, one day maybe I'll be a writer and I'll be interviewed by this guy who interviews writers. Somebody had told me, yeah, he draws weird parallels and connects weird dots that may or may not be there, but you... And then he did. He did. He was talking about how all of my work was about sensitivity, exposed nerves. That's what he kept saying. I kept saying it's about humanity versus systems. That's what I always thought. But he kept saying exposed nerves, which I guess, yeah, I don't know. Is that just...
I feel like you have exposed nerves.
Yeah. I mean, well, everyone does. What does that even mean? I don't know.
Feels like I just hit one right now.
What is that supposed to mean? It was odd and insightful. I was on fire. I guess.
Do you think it's a catchphrase of his that he's applied to lots of people?
No, God, no.
That's something that he just gave you.
No, it's I don't think he doesn't have catchphrases that he doesn't have catch-alls that he uses with each individual guest. It's just that with each guest, the gimmick seems to be that he kind of all of a sudden is asking a question that's sort of like. Well, oh, yeah, I guess. I don't know how to explain it. Listen to it. I'm plugging it. I was happy with the interview. But the other weird thing is it was at the house of the guy who created SpongeBob SquarePants. But he wasn't on the show. It was just at his house.
Is it always at his house?
No, it's not.
Does he always host from a different...
No, he does not always host from a house. And no, there's not... It was... Pulled up at a giant house, the kind of house you'd expect to have if you created SpongeBob SquarePants.
A giant pineapple.
Rolled in. And there was just all these people, I guess they're KCRW donors, like kind of well-heeled liberal types, like kind of ersatz Tim Robbinses and eating prosciutto and things and drinking delightful like Campari drinks.
They were low budge Tim Robbins.
Well, I wouldn't call him low budge. I mean,
ersatz.
For all we know. Well, all right. Well, I'm saying non Tim Robbins. Tim Robbinses, handsome old men with gray feathered hair.
Okay, but just not. Yeah. They weren't in the Hudsucker Proxy.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. There were actors. I'm sure there were a lot of them were captains of industry or something. They were all patrons of public.
All hanging out at the creator of SpongeBob's house.
All at SpongeBob's house, even though SpongeBob, who I talked to, I don't think he likes to be called SpongeBob. He was it's at my house, man. Good to have you here. And
he was there. Like, was he?
Yeah, but only because his wife was like, she. I think she's into. I think from talking to him, what I gleaned is his wife is very active in that community and so offered up their home as a venue.
The highfalutin liberal writer type community or what community?
Well, I don't know. Well, these people were, I believe they were primarily donors. They were like people who really keep KCRW going, I think.
Oh, I see. I got you. Yeah.
Just the strangest. I said to Elvis Mitchell when I got there, well, I've listened to your show a bunch of times. I've heard you interview people. I didn't know that when I was listening to it, you were in a living room full of middle-aged
ersatz Tim
hipsters. I never picked up on that. And he said, "Oh no, we've never done this before." I was like, "Okay, all right, and I'll see you on the ice." And we just sat in front of a fireplace surrounded by delightful, primarily Caucasoid, like people kind of just sitting enthralled at every little word I had to say about how I was angry at executives and how humanity should fight the system. And it was invigorating.
Did you ever get like a back rub from anybody? Or?
There was a point where Elvis started like, you know, rubbing me. But it was radio, so you won't be able to tell from listening. And I didn't feel like I was allowed to say no,
I think,
which is fucked up. But I also don't feel like I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah, but also you have a lot of exposed nerves. You know?
Yeah. He, what do you mean? but it was it was nice. It was interesting, and I felt very articulate. I went up and I stumbled over my words very little. I don't know if it was I felt like I was in a room full of my parents or something, and I had to rise to the level of my cardigan.
Had you? I'm not saying this to be glib. Like, had you drunk less? Like, did you show up a little?
No, I had like three of these wonderful drinks they made that were Campari grapefruit drinks. Wow. I don't know if I was less drunk than I usually am at 4 in the afternoon.
I'm asking, was it a gig? You go like, you know, I'm gonna have a
no.
You know,
I wasn't. I wasn't. No, if anything, I was a little panicked about how sober I was, because I was like, I don't want my brain to get in the way of what's going on here. I've got a lot of weird class issues and stuff. This is a living room full of rich people listening to me.
Did you make any friends outside of Elvis?
I don't make friends. I don't know what that means. You mean like a snowman? Like you go in the front yard and you. How do you make a friend?
You and these white people that are on the couch with the gray hair and the back rubs. I mean, was there an after party? Did you guys?
There was a mingling.
In my mind, the sun goes down and you guys are in the tub.
it gets bacchanalian.
Hey guys, there's a room full of swim trunks. We got all sizes, whatever you want.
No, but everybody, I was really taken and a little put off by how handsome everyone was. I feel like that because they're all over 50 and they all look under 30, and I'm 41 and I look 60. Like I felt like that was okay. But the guy that created SpongeBob's got a 15-year-old kid, and I won't drop his age. He told me how old he was, and I was shocked. I was, you know, it's weird when somebody tells you how old they are, and my response was like, holy shit. But I forgot to say, I'm saying that because you look young. So it's just sort of like, I'm 52. And you go, wow, fuck, Jesus Christ.
Holy smoke.
What's that like? But there's a, like they, there's a, I mean, like people that are, they, I don't know, they must eat algae and not drink and just walk on a treadmill and do crunches, fight crime. I don't know what they do. Like, their faces look like little Ken dolls.
We've both been to parties full of like rich white people. They tend to, like, people with lots of money tend to age well. They get really good health care and shit.
So the guy that created
SpongeBob.
They
take a lot of vacations. They get some vitamin D and stuff like that.
I wonder, does that mean they're going to live to 150, or does that mean, as Aaron said, no, they're going to die when you die, but they're going to do so gracefully. They'll probably die 20 years later too, by the way. But I mean, they'll have a better quality of life. He looks like Davy Jones, the guy that created SpongeBob. He is like, the number of his age is like, you're like, wow, you should have thrown in the towel biologically. It's a couple years older than me, but it's like I associate it with like, fuck it, why you should be wearing Kleenex boxes on your feet, and you should be like flipping off traffic and shooting your TV with a 38 and fucking like checking out, man. He looks like Davy Jones.
But he created that show a long time ago.
He looks great.
Yeah, okay, I see what you're saying.
It's just amazing to me. Like I get a little jealous. I guess I should eat some kale or something.
I feel like the secret for the wealthy. People that I know that have awesome lives, they spend a lot of their time on vacation. There's lots of like Rivieras and things, you know. You're on a boat a lot.
Here's somebody who's this is, to me, this is a truly remarkable. I wish there was a way we could somebody Wikipedia Stan Winston and tell me how old he is.
Is that the special effects guy?
Yeah. He was on a we're watching the newest season of King of the Nerds. Remember when we had Genevieve Pearson on the show? She was a contestant on King of the Nerds. There's a new season of that. Stan Winston comes out with a robot he built or whatever. He looks like Tony Hawk or something.
Well, I have been to his old house many times because Ryan Stiles from Who's Line bought his old house in L.A. I think he recently sold. And his house is up in, like, this old house that he got rid of. You'd be young if you had this house. It's up in, like, the valley side of the Hollywood Hills, like towards Encino. There's a backyard that if you were the guy in the world that could throw a football the farthest, you couldn't throw a football out of that yard. And there was the front of it looked like if Bilbo Baggins was as tall as Gandalf. It looked like a Shire home, except the person that lived there was 11 feet tall.
You know, we have shared units of measure like acres and yards. If you don't have to.
Nobody knows. No, see, fuck you, because...
Well, okay,
no. If I said, Dan, it was 14,000 square feet, you would go, ooh la la. You wouldn't know what I was talking about.
You're right.
You would say, how many hobbits?
How many Gandalfs? If I was a Gandalf, how many hobbits? Okay.
How dare you?
All right.
You hit my exposed nerve, you son of a bitch.
I really did.
It's a house that from the front, you go, oh, this is like a nice, beautiful, like a Bilbo Baggins-y Gandalf house. And you get inside it, you can get lost in the cocksucker. You can actually hang a wrong turn. And you go, like, okay, I don't remember how to get back to the wine cellar. I know that there was a pool table, but you can't. And fuck it. Like, I think it's not all... Like, as the old comic...
Does everybody... If you go to Pottery Barn, if you're lucky enough to get it before they sell out of the five that they keep on the counter, Jeff's album of covers of classics, it's called Lost in the Cocksucker. It's so beautiful. Like it's not original stuff, but you really bring new life into.
It's only a paper moon.
So
I do Sound of Silence. It's good stuff. It's mostly zither. But I feel like as the comic Joe E. Lewis from the 20s, 30s, he said, money isn't everything, but it calms the nerves a little. And I think that there's a thing about wealth. Wealth can also destroy you. Wealth can turn you into a Scrooge, and it can crush and weaken your cells, I think, if all you care about is competition. But there are people, and I think, you know, in our world, this little enclave that we live in, I don't meet rich tycoons. I don't meet entrepreneurs and shit. I meet rich comedians and singers and stuff like that. And I think it may be the art that keeps them young, but I think there's a way to grow old gracefully, and certainly money doesn't hurt.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Speaking of no, fuck that. Okay. All right. So here's a new segment called "What Am I Doing?" What's Dan Harmon doing? So the most boring segment we've ever done. Let's get it out of the way. Do you have a boring song?
A boring song? Or that song I almost started the show with.
What's Dan Harmon doing this week on the schedule? So tomorrow morning I'm going in. You guys may have seen me on Twitter or the whatnot making fun of the fact that there's this Dungeons & Dragons anthology on tape coming out. On tape.
It's on ceramic disc, I think.
On Audible Bit Bytes. Ice-T did this, like, Dungeons & Dragons thing, right? Where he went in and was just like... And he was there, he was interviewed about it, and I guess he was saying things like, yeah, it's the weirdest thing I ever read. I couldn't... It's a bunch of gobbledygook and... I've been doing my impression of Ice-T.
I'm saying, first off,
Knots the orc came down the mountain wielding his axe plus three. It wasn't personal. It was business.
Wait, can I hit pause real quick?
Sure.
I currently have 14 questions. Question number one. He is a dungeon master. He's narrating. He's reading it out
loud.
He's
reading a book, an Audible book. It's a D&D book. Thanks a lot. What a lighthouse. In my stammering, the only words I had were D&D book.
Like a player's guide or a monster manual?
Well, Adam, you think you're not? Adam.
I mean,
all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone's excited.
They're not saying boo, they're saying Adam.
I was saying boo. He's doing a D&D novel, and he talked on his podcast, which he now has, about how motherfuckers have maps for places that don't even exist. It's ridiculous.
Amazing.
I read this to my D. I linked this to my D&D group, and we named our group "Places That Don't Motherfucking Exist."
Did someone put him up to this? Or some genius producer?
He has a bad agent.
It's not like he wants for money. Although in other interviews, he's said that Joel McHale is like this. Like it's, sometimes, no matter how much money you have, you might be driven by a work ethic. Maybe Ice-T has this. Maybe he's Irish. I don't know.
He wanted to get a book out so everybody would know that his voice should not just be on Comedy Bang Bang.
Right. So anyways, I tweeted about it. I was so taken with the idea of Ice-T. Then doing a Dungeons & Dragons book on tape. The next day, I get an email inviting me to be one of the people, because it's like an
on Ice-T's D&D thing?
Well, it's not Ice. I will be a label mate with Ice-T, you would say.
What the fuck?
So they asked, will you come in and do this thing? And I'm doing it tomorrow morning. Here are my other label mates. Here are the other people that are doing that are reading the thing. Michael Chiklis.
Nice.
Now I'm gonna breeze through some names that maybe you know. Felicia Day.
Woo.
Melissa Roche. Tom Felton. Greg Grunberg. Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Ice-T.
Wait, I'm sorry. Which Al Yankovic?
Deposed Ukrainian.
Not president. That uptight cocksucker.
Oh, yeah.
Alan.
Yeah.
Fuck him. The Ice-T. Will Wheaton.
Yeah.
Here's where my kneecaps go all buttery. David Duchovny. David Duchovny. David Duchovny. How many? If you've listened to all 89 episodes of this podcast, you know that instinctively, when I talk about a sexy man, I blurt out David Duchovny.
Wait, okay, Dan, I'm behind the ball here, but like, there is a he started doing this. Is it Ice-T's project or somebody?
No, it's not Ice-T's project.
They got them to read the books. They didn't write the books.
They brought him in, and now they're bringing me in. It's a kind of fellowship of like you know, as Aaron said, I want to see this pilot with these people being locked in a cabin. I have one more name to tell you.
Okay.
Sean Astin and Danny Pudi. They were at the time of this email. They were going to try to get Danny Pudi. David Duchovny.
Is this a television project?
No, it's
audiobooks.
It's audio. It's reading a thing. It's a book on tape.
You said pilot.
I didn't say pilot.
Oh, I heard
say
pilot. I'm sorry.
Ice-T came in, chapter one. Gribnops had it.
Did he write the material?
Down to three hit points.
Things were not looking good for Tordek the Dwarf.
A moderate heal wound spell took care of the last of the concerns.
So you'll.
However, business remained. So he'll do that, and then I'm going to come in and be like, also, here's another thing.
That was a really good Dan Harmon.
All right, thank you. Adam Goldberg, thanks for coming up, Adam.
Where was Adam, really?
Yeah. I mean, boy, that couldn't have happened from the audience.
They call him the elucidator.
Dan, I wonder, first off, a couple things. Full disclosure, I like your Ice-T impression quite a bit.
Thank you.
It's a very good Ice-T impression.
It's nothing personal, Jeff. It's just business.
What I... I would like to hear a brief conversation between Ice-T and Vincent Price, though. Yeah. just so I can hear the how many Gandalfs of distance are in between.
So you're saying Ice-T is coming over to Vincent Price's house? He's been invited over for dinner.
Like certainly, yeah. Whatever. Right. You want.
And he doesn't know that for dinner sometimes means I'm going to eat you.
I would say that Elvis Mitchell is going to be doing an interview, but this time it's at Vincent Price's house.
Oh, okay.
You've been asked over, and you didn't realize, or Ice-T didn't realize
right.
that he wasn't. Coming into Vincent Price's home.
Ding dong. Damn. Takes a long time for them to come to the door. Hello. The fuck? I'm here to do the Elvis Mitchell documentary. Yes. I hope you'll enjoy doing...
I think you're trying to not be Ice-T.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're... Okay.
I'm not saying they're identical. I'm saying that their Olympic rings overlap a tiny bit.
Ice-T, I presume. Please come into my house. I'm Vincent Price. All right, but it's nothing personal. No, it's business.
You know what we should do? I think at some point, Ice-T should start rapping and Vincent Price could do one of his famous Thriller-style breakdowns.
All right. Yo. Ice-T. Ice-T on the... Ice-T gonna get with me. I got the tippy to the two, got the four to the three. Ice-T, you're gonna put sweetener in me. Cop killer on the front to the 4-3. Aspect ratio 16:9. I got the high definition and it's gonna be mine. I go down to Best Buy. I go down every aisle. I go look at VCRs by the mile. Say, will this one have a tracking problem? I don't know. I got slob phlegm in my mouth when I get a cold. I wanna go home and watch the old people roll past my porch. Yo, there's Larry Storch. He's an actor from Hawaii 5-0. I don't need your husbands or wives to go to Google it and verify my reference. I just want to rap and experience your deference, cause I'm OG to the OGO. That means original gangster got a old and a go. I don't know what it spells all day, but I'm Ice motherfucking T and I'm not gay. Got a cop killer bullet in my penis for a gun. Gonna rub it till I start to come. And when the sperm comes out, it's gonna pierce the armor of a cop. And then you know I went farther than I should have gone. Should have left it back when I rhymed a couple times. Yo, ow, I'm Ice-T rapping hard, and now it's time for me to do the Vincent Price bridge. Spiders and skeletons coming out of your closet on a spooky Hallow's Eve. The mind reels with scariness. Fogs and fogs of scary souls. Blood in buckets of wolves' howls. On an Howl's Eve. Cop killer. Yo, yeah. The cop killer. Got it. Yeah, that's all. You couldn't tell the difference. If Ice-T didn't tell you Vincent Price was coming in,
yeah.
That could have been a very confusing album. There's a reason why. When Vincent Price got the Michael Jackson call, he's like, who wants me to do a bridge in their popular song? Is it one of those people I sound like? No, this is Michael Jackson. Let me hear a recording of him. All right, okay, I'll do it. Ice-T wants you to do it. Let me hear. Yo, Ice-T. No, I won't do it. Okay, that was a long walk for... Sometimes I tell you a joke and then I explain it.
Larry Storch was on Hawaii Five-O?
I think so.
I'm going to go F Troop. He's on F Troop.
I told you not to look it up. Ice-T told you.
I mean, I would love to find out that Larry Storch was also on Hawaii Five-O.
It's nothing personal. It's just business. The Harmontown documentary is going to be at South by Southwest. I forgot to mention that last week. Go see it. We want to fill that theater.
Do we know what's going to happen with it, or are they waiting for the festival people to decide how that will be released, distributed, shown?
Oh, no. Yeah, the idea of these festivals is you show it, and then I guess probably Harvey Weinstein will come up afterwards and go, I think America is ready to watch a movie about a fat alcoholic baby do nothing. Let's put this in 50,000 theaters, and I mean that. Yeah. Barring that happening, I think we'll it'll be in the fans' hands. I think it's a very interesting movie. I'll say one thing: it's a very fair portrayal of me, which is a bummer for me.
But that was up to you, because this thing has gone through zillions of cuts. But you kept going in there saying no, like let's not pull the punches.
Well, don't
on
mischaracterize that. A lot of people online are wondering about that, but I want to make it very clear, and it will be made very clear because my name's on it as an executive producer. But I think it'll be very clear when you see it that I couldn't possibly have had final cut. The deal I made with Neil was for the feels and the wheel.
Right.
You dig? The deal I made with Neil was it's my tour, it's his movie, you know, and I wanted to be able to try to help him. And there were a couple moments where he's doing a bit, you know, if you're saying like, hey, look at that thing across the room. And I'm able to say, you know, you should cut to that thing here. And it'll get a bigger laugh than what you're getting right now if you change it by 8 frames. But I am not allowed. I wish I was allowed, but which is why I can't be allowed to say, hey, you know that part where I'm really abusive to my girlfriend? Let's lift that. It would make a shittier movie, and also I would be doing it for the wrong reasons. So I think it's an interesting documentary. I can't tell. I'm required to hate myself, required to be bored by myself. I watch the movie. I go, I'm always kind of riveted. I've talked to people who have seen it. They go, like, I want to see the whole thing.
I saw a cut of it with Kate, and I watched it, and he's like, do you have any notes? I'm like, no. Like, I was in it. Like, my only note is I wish I could see the entire tour. Like, it made me feel nostalgic.
Which I think people will be able to. I think there's, like, 700 hours of things, including, like, 25 minutes of John Oliver. That would be worth $5 right there. This guy shot a lot of shit.
They can show 17 hours of us singing Pringles Dick and chicken noodle dick.
Yeah, I think what emerges is a very, very, very interesting portrait of a 41-year-old idiot that doesn't know what he's doing at all. Okay, so, but I think it's interesting. There's a depth to it too that has to do with the fans and the.
That's my favorite part. Without like, I don't think you can spoil that. But the best part about it, there's interviews after lots of the shows with a bunch of people that came to the shows, and that's like I've seen several like different cuts and clips of that, and it always like it really chokes me up. It's really like sweet and emotional. It's cool.
Yeah. So if you're within the sound of my voice, please come to that premiere. Whatever theater we're in, I think we're in a huge theater, and I want to fill that thing.
We're doing a podcast, then we're watching the movie, and then we're all going to go out. And,
I think so. Yeah. Cap City. Well, are we sure about
Cap
that?
Cap City's the
I don't,
podcast.
I don't know if we're sure about that yet.
No, I don't know.
Is that? I mean, because they were emailing me going like, oh, the venue might be changing and all this stuff. Anyways, why don't we put the onus on the bonus? And bring out Mitch Hurwitz!
Yo. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Oh!
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Mitch Hurwitz, Arrested Development. Gonna fuck your mama, then give her a breath mint. Gonna fuck your mama, gonna do Netflix.
That's so nice.
Fuck your mama with 100 of my squid dicks.
Oh, this is wonderful.
Arrested Development. Fuck you for season at pay the rent.
Robin,
gonna stream that shit.
Robin Williams breakdown.
No.
Yeah, yeah. Gonna.
No. That's all I wanted.
That's all I wanted.
Will you remember any of this tomorrow? Will you hear this podcast and
that's
say
a loaded like, question?
Will you hear the podcast and say I do not remember singing about VCR tracking? Do you even remember now?
I'm sober as a no. I'm relatively speaking,
it's
I'm very
just
sober.
That, it's just that it was such stream of consciousness. That was so impressive.
That's why my rapping is so important.
Can you not freestyle, Mitch? Have you ever tried?
No,
and failed?
I really haven't.
I think everybody's tried at one point.
I don't know that I want to start tonight.
Everybody's tried to handle it like at a freestyle. Right?
I was telling people today, like Mike Schneider at TV Guide. Do you know that? You know that fella?
I like Mike.
Yeah. He's all right. He has his moments. I was explaining that you and I were now best friends.
Yep.
I don't want to smother you.
Yeah. Only on stage, and we keep it that way. Like we just don't even. We won't even look at each other.
Talking about the intimidating like nature of when you're. Oh, this is ridiculous to talk about. It puts you on the spot. You really like encapsulate wittiness. It's really ridiculous.
Oh God, no. You know, it reminds me. No, I have nothing. That's.
No, it occurred to me halfway through that it's such a ridiculous thing to say to somebody on stage.
Oh, that's very nice.
But I'm so sorry.
But I was just talking to your fiancée, right? The two
E's. Do you marry her?
No, well, listen, I mean, I think if we're going there already. But anyway, I was just talking to your... And she said you were so articulate today. Like the
soul other shoes
of
dropping
wit.
Here, yeah.
Yeah.
You can feel more comfortable with 45-year-old people with gray in their hair.
No kidding. I wasn't thrilled backstage listening to kind of what sounded maybe like dissing, you know, white people that have some money. I felt like that was maybe older people. Kind of felt like
I think it's okay
to
pull
that could hurt
thread,
somebody's
though.
Feelings. Really hurts.
There's no danger there of anything happening, though.
Was
if you're going to have a target.
Was Elvis Mitchell being very thoughtful with you? What's he like in front of an audience?
He was deep. Has he ever interviewed you?
No, but I listened to his interviews, and he'll be talking about the movie Easy A.
How has he never interviewed you?
Yeah, fired up. What?
You've never... I'm surprised by that.
No, no.
Mitch, do you feel...
Why? Because my name's Mitchell? Is that why you just thought that would be like...
No, because you created Arrested Development.
We could do
he
10 minutes on the
me.
Name. You know, I don't... No, I haven't done it. I talked to Terry Gross once.
What?
Yeah.
Fuck
have you talked
you.
To Terry Gross?
No.
And right in the middle of it, she said, this is fresh air. And it really was like... you know, it was like Hendrix playing the national anthem or something. It's like... There it is.
No, that's like, okay. That's the answer.
I know.
The reason why Elvis Mitchell's never sat down with you is because he's local. You're big league. You got the Terry Gross.
He's black, right? Is he black?
I didn't notice. I don't see that kind
of
thing. I guess come to think of it, I suppose. Yeah.
Well, I have a problem. You know, I have that problem with black.
Right.
People.
No.
So I know that could have been part of it.
Elvis Mitchell's black?
Yes.
I think he is.
But Dan would know.
Oh, you really should know.
Now that you mention it, yes, he was.
I admire your restraint in not bringing that up earlier.
Yeah.
That's the first time you've ever had an encounter with a black person where you didn't say the word black in the first sentence.
I mean, I don't think we can forget, you know, the impression of Ice-T. I don't think we should go... You
but
know what
that,
I mean? I don't think we should just let that go completely.
That is an accurate impression of Ice-T.
Very accurate.
And any stereotypical landmines that I'm stepping on are attached to his feet.
Absolutely.
He sounds like that.
It's
not
channeling
personal.
Something.
It's just business.
I love how it ends with I eat.
You telling me this lady was raped, then murdered? It's SVU. It's him on the crime scene.
It's a nasty city.
What's he been up to, Mitch?
Him and his stand-up comic friend, Richard Belzer. What have I been up to? God, I'm being held accountable for so many things. I'll tell you what, I watched House of Cards. That really, that was fun.
Are you, okay, let's talk about that.
Well, I don't know. I can't say anything about it.
I watched last season. The last season ended with him, like, going jogging and turning off his Walkman or something.
I had no recollection of what happened in the last season.
It was just sort of following it, but
it was fun. It was fun. Yeah.
And
it helps, you know, like, it just helps you plan. It's going to sound awful. But anyway, it helps you plan your own murders because you see how he plans it. In case you haven't seen it, He kills a couple people. And that, no, here's what I didn't get. Actually, one of the things I didn't get about it, that, but I just don't get in life, and you kind of alluded to this earlier. Like, how much is too much? When are, there's one scene. Have you seen it?
The first season.
Yeah, right. You're right. There's one scene where Gerald McCraney is talking. You know, they're threatening Gerald McCraney. And they say, we're going to shut down your power plants for 2 weeks. That's going to be a lot of income. And I'm just always amazed by that. I used to talk to Ron Howard about that when we did Arrested the first time. And I said, you know, if I had directed Cocoon, that would have been it. I would have been like, you know, walking into restaurants and saying, Mitchell Hurwitz, director of Cocoon. I certainly wouldn't be just out there doing another one every year.
What are you saying? I'm not sure. I don't understand what you're saying.
Well, I'm just saying that ruthless ambition. I don't know. Maybe it's in all of us.
Are you
asking
why these powerful men continue to play power games?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I guess so.
That always confuses the hell out of me. Why does Rupert Murdoch continue to care?
Because
they're competitive people, and it's all about winning. They are not used to being second in anything. Like Carnegie and Rockefeller and those guys, like they resent that someone has more money than them. Like
they're not measuring things in terms of, like, a quarter is not a quarter of a dollar. It doesn't exist to them. That's not like this.
Oh no, I would say it certainly does. I think they know exactly what a quarter is.
No, but I mean, it doesn't represent a fourth of a load of laundry. It doesn't translate into goods and services. It's a measure of.
But
it represents
that bit of mortar and the brick in the house that I built with my own two hands and I pulled myself up.
No, I don't think it does. I think it's just a collection. I think it's just like collectors. It must be.
And these guys aren't bootstrappers. I don't care how many millions they were born with. They were not born poor.
Somewhere, like some of the robber barons, I think, were working class.
Well, maybe back before money was just being invented. Maybe a couple of them, by sheer coincidence, didn't have enough because money hadn't been invented yet. But
yeah, money was pretty new.
I don't want to name names, but today's tycoons, I guarantee you, there's none of them that were born broke, or we'd know their name. We'd go like, that's the guy that was born broke and is now a tycoon.
Some
of them are very proud of the
business.
Fact that they were only given $50 million to start their whatchamacallit.
Oh, absolutely. That's Trump's story. You know, he took $50 million and turned it into a billion. First of all, you got to put it somewhere.
Easy.
Yeah, you could put that in a money market account. The same thing happens.
Yeah, and then you have a problem because you have more money and you got to put that somewhere.
Yeah.
It's that's why I say I don't like it when we take on people that are white and make money. You know, it's challenging. Thank you. Oh, nice. Yeah. Like there's someone wealthy.
Have you guys ever hung... Have Mitch, Dan, have the two of you ever hung out one-on-one? Ever gone out and had a lunch or a thing?
How dare you? Yes.
Yeah,
you know where we hung out?
Are you asking about three ways? Is that what you're weird?
I'm just saying.
Tell him where we hung out, Mitch.
I forget the name of the bar, but it was a bar.
Spearmint Rhino?
Spearmint Rhino. What was it called? Dry Bar?
Drawing Room.
We went to the Dry Bar together.
God damn it.
And
we hung out at the Drawing Room.
You guys have the Drawing Room.
You guys have never been to the Dry Bar. Never hung out together.
I hung out at the Drawing Room with Mitch Hurwitz.
You just colluded together to come up with a story.
He forgot the name of the place.
Because he's never been there.
He's been in there. We had a wonderful conversation. He and I are best friends.
Jeff is
not true.
Jeff has some jealousy issues. He probably doesn't even know that I was the comptroller for
when you were gone, he comptrolled.
I listened to it, and you were wonderful.
Thank you so much. That is so big of
you. Don't
let
him high road you.
No. I think you're great.
Well, thank you. You've never listened to me.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who
did better. This is not a jealousy thing. You said earlier, Dan, that I said, did you make any friends at the Elvis Mitchell thing? You're like, what's a friend?
Yeah, how do you make a friend?
But I was like, are you a friend maker, Mitch? Are you a gregarious?
No, I'm not, actually. I mean, every time you talk about me as being kind of like, you'll say things like, boy, he's kind of, you know, he doesn't look neurotic, or I don't know, whatever you say. It's like, no, I'm so neurotic. And so, you know, if I'm out with people, I embrace that. I'm always happy about it. But it takes a lot to get me out. Even when you talk about going to San Francisco and doing this tour and everything.
Do you want to come to my wedding?
I'd love to officiate. Do you need someone? That gives me enough time.
That'd be great.
I would.
I will. You're on the short list now.
Okay.
For sure.
I'll be great.
Are you already ordained? Do you have
No, but I have time now, and I won't make it all about me. I mean, you know, that'll be some of it. Obviously, I have to have an act, but
Could you? I mean, there has to be a little Robin Williams moment in the officiating.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I have a lot of props around.
Oh, good.
And I'll take a plunger, and I'll be, you know, like, oh, I'm a unicorn. I can't. That wasn't Robin Williams. So my favorite Robin Williams thing, though, is the impression of the thing that doesn't exist anymore, which is the preacher.
Yeah. Right.
You know, like,
Preacher Jesus still, Christ.
Still making fun of the preacher. Like, we're with you. We get it. He's an asshole.
What a
hypocrite. I could marry the hell out of you. I know now because I've been married.
All right, short list. It's like there's three people on the list, and it's a controversy.
I couldn't stop sweating when I got married. It was awful. I was nervous beforehand, and I was in New York, and I thought, well, let me just go for a run, and that'll calm me down. And I went for a run, and I went out into Central Park, and then I ran around the whole
reservoir. Were you in your tuxedo running?
In the tux?
Yeah, of course, because you want it to fit and move with you. No. No, I just a full spandex bodysuit, and I just went out running.
Right.
Just for speed.
This is back when you were a known strangler back then.
Well, I knew a lot of stranglers. I know what you're thinking
Never convicted, but you were certainly under investigation for many years.
I remember I was jogging past those kids wilding. Yeah, hi, kids. This is, you know, I just felt like part of the scene. Anyway, I came back and I looked at the clock, and I had like a half hour. And I panicked. You know, I hadn't even tried on my tux, and I jumped in the shower, and I came out, and I'm still sweating. And then I put on the tux, and I had to walk like six blocks and then get up on a chuppah, because at that point, I think I still believed in God, and we had this Jewish thing. I'm going
to
be honest
about
my...
You're not supposed to get on top of the chuppah. That's you're not Gidget.
Wait, what?
You don't get on top of the chuppah.
That's why they were laughing.
But why it looked so triumphant.
No, did I say on top of it? No, I was right, but I had to get I had to get on top of a stage under a chuppah, and then there was a light right here. And the whole time I was just like trying to very casually wipe away. It was like Albert Brooks and, you know, just look. And nothing says confidence about getting married. Sweat.
Nothing says confidence about wanting to get married. Like, I should go take a run.
Yeah, I know. I know. Like,
literally,
this is my last run. I just got
running away from the scene.
Yeah.
Do you get in fights with your wife?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I've learned. I've learned a lot about. This is what you do when. Here's the move.
Put on some spandex.
I want to make sure Aaron's not back there.
Just run.
So nobody ever wants to apologize first when you have a fight.
Not when your heart is pounding and your arteries are dilated.
Go for it. You go for it. You don't have to mean it. And it makes them feel so much worse than any insult, you know. You know, how could you say that? How could you say that? There's a lot of that, by the way. We have a lot of, like, complete... You know, I just feel like every time... I feel like every time I... You know.
Yeah.
But if you dive in with, like, look, I love you. I don't want you to be unhappy. So I'll take the blame. No, I'll take the blame. Okay. You know, they can't... Many women can't apologize first, but they can't, you know, resist.
I feel like I was always so good at what you're describing, and I feel like, I don't know if this is justification, rationalization, but I can't get out of that pit with Erin, and I have to assume it's because she intimidates me more than anyone I've been with. I always know that I've always been able to do that. Always been able to, like, find the high road immediately.
Right.
And I can never do it. I'm so mad.
Actually, I was only half joking. I mean, I will say that one of the keys to, like, my relationship being successful, I think, and by successful, I mean she lets me sleep with other women.
Safe crack.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big success.
Once you overcome that hurdle, matrimony
marriage.
Becomes gravy.
Yeah, no, it's not true. It really is kind of, it is doing what I just made a joke out of. It's really trying to see that other person, because that's really what anybody wants, right? Is to be seen, is to be acknowledged. And everything you're doing in a fight is sort of not seeing them and kind of claiming you don't see me. So when if I can remind myself of that, I actually can sort of think like, I mean, look at your fiance.
I refuse to.
And I know. That's a problem. And you just go, oh, I love her. I love her, even
no,
though
it's
she
easy
doesn't
now, but
understand.
I think it's like I don't know anything about Pokemon, but I know it has something to do with weapons or something or choices of attacks.
I'm doing a whole audiobook on Pokemon next week with the Harlem Globetrotters.
Squinchlet knew his tornado attack could reduce his enemy to a confused state.
Doing it. I'm doing it with
three cards left.
Layla Ali and I, that's Muhammad's daughter,
Layla Ali.
Are doing. Yeah, she's, for whatever reason, they put us together.
Yeah. I've done a show with Layla.
You have not, really?
I swear to God. But on Whose Line Is Anyway, they brought her out as a guest.
Oh, my
so
God.
So Wayne Brady and I had to sing a song to Layla Ali, and she was awesome. She was great.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah,
but also, she, you know, talk about being intimidating. Like, yeah. She's never lost a fight.
I've never lost a fight.
Yeah. Have you ever fought Layla Ali?
I've never fought anyone.
Have you ever thrown a punch in anger at somebody? Have you ever actually like thrown a duke at someone?
I don't think I can tell some of these stories.
It was your wife?
Yes.
It was your wife.
But
oh my God!
In my defense, you know, they were children. No.
They were welding.
I've come close. You know, like I do lose some sanity in those moments.
I
just feel like I don't care.
I just remembered, and now let's bring Aaron out. I punched her in the jaw in my sleep. All right, Aaron, come out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thank God for saying in your sleep at the end of that.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say I punched her in the jaw last Tuesday.
No, I physically assaulted Aaron in bed.
Yeah.
We just watched Demolition Man, and I felt... I fell asleep, and in my dream, I was fighting Sylvester Stallone in a ring. Like, I was boxing him, and he kept punching me. And I was getting so frustrated.
Because your arms aren't moving right, you know.
And then I finally, like, and I woke up, and something was weird in the bed. Like, I had moved, and my fiancé is in bed next to me going, ow, massaging her jaw.
Wow.
And I'm going, I punched.
I've done it. I mean, I have, and my excuse really was, it's so lame, but I, you know, my
well,
wife
Mitch,
said,
when
you
and I were together, you're,
no,
you have,
no,
a big
he almost never punches.
I said, what's the matter with you? You just punched me. You woke me up. I said, well, I was defending you, which I really thought at the time, because that was what was happening in the dream, but.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, Dan, we've talked about this on the show before. Dan really is very, he's so verbose in his sleep in a weird way, in a, like a haunting way, because it's not.
It's riveting. I imagine.
I think most people, when they speak in their sleep, sound kind of drunk or disoriented, but Dan speaks very clearly and very like frightening, weird non sequiturs.
Also non-secular, though.
Non-secular.
Like, I get down to mythological positions.
There is no God.
God walked down from the... Yeah.
I actually think it's the best part of the documentary. I saw an early cut.
It's all the
and that stuff of you asleep.
What if you spoke in your sleep, but it was all gospel? yeah, Dan speaks in his sleep a lot. And we actually, the other night when I was watching... when Dan falls asleep, I'll watch a shitty movie for comfort. And Dan will... We've talked about this before.
This is after you've watched Demolition Man. Then you'll watch
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Then I'll go lowbrow.
Yeah, okay. Got it. Yeah.
There's Dan's version of a shitty movie. And there's my version of a comforting movie, like My Best Friend's Wedding or et cetera, et cetera. And Dan will wake up in the middle of his sleep and say, well, I mean, if you're not in love, I mean, well, why don't you just fuck everybody at the wedding and just fall back asleep? And I feel all the shame because it doesn't feel like he's talking in his sleep.
She actually, this is not a real, like, you, a couple
it's
of nights
it's
ago.
It's a one-sided thing because
you got
don't
up
remember
and left
any
the
of
bedroom
it.
Because
yeah.
I was about to fall asleep and you, this is a milestone in our relationship. You left the bedroom to go finish watching a romantic comedy in a mm-hmm. different room because you knew, air quotes, knew that if you continued watching it in bed, I would have notes in my sleep.
Yeah, and I wasn't mad. I kissed you and patted your bottom, and I walked into the other room. And
you powdered his bottom?
I patted his bottom.
That's how he likes to be greeted. You know that.
My bottom self powders.
Gross.
No, that's beautiful. Gross. That's not gross.
Gross.
I think that's beautiful. Yeah,
thank you.
I got up. He woke up in his sleep again and had a criticism for the very shitty movie I was watching, which is like telling somebody that Cheetos are bad for you. Yes, I know. I know.
But I'm sleeping.
What?
I'm sleeping.
I know. Well, but then you wake. But this is why we've evolved as a couple, because you woke up and you. I hate to tell you guys what I was watching. I was watching How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Ugh. How to Lose an Audience in 8 Seconds.
Dan, wake up. Dan, wake up.
You just did it again, Dan.
Fuck that movie.
Which is a terrible movie.
Fuck that movie.
And it's like watching it as a woman, like it's really sexist and crazy. But
so
like
mad about it.
Just the way the truth is that I like Matthew McConaughey's voice is like a song.
Then watch True Detective.
I do.
Wow. Wow. It's so interesting.
So, yeah. True Detective, yeah. True Detective on HBO. It's the only show you got to take out. It's a serialized miniseries, so it's eligible for a different award category.
The truth is that, like, I'm so into True Detective, I wanted more McConaughey, and I was watching
it. Then watch Dallas Buyers Club.
Here it comes.
Yeah. If you're a redneck with AIDS, what you gonna do when your society's made your mockery of you and your health care? You're gonna go bring to bear new vitamins from Mexico.
Well, thanks, Dan. I hadn't seen that yet.
Because like I've watched
that'd be great if that was the musical event at the Oscars, by the way. It's like, you know, like they just didn't get, like, at the last minute, like, Dan, we heard you do an amazing tribute. We haven't seen your Philomena. I'm sure it's amazing.
I know I'm not alone in like the amazing discovery that Matthew McConaughey is a great actor. So it's funny watching him in these really shitty movies. So anyway. Yeah. So you will
then watch Surf's Up, bro. Wait, what's it called? Surfer.
Anyway, Dan woke up out of his sleep and criticized the movie, and I was
good.
Like, you know what? I'm gonna go to the other room because I know this is wrong. It's like I was doing crack in bed, and he was like, "Don't do crack in bed." Yes, I know. Yes, I'll do it in the other room. So I kissed him goodbye.
That movie's a piece of shit. I fell asleep at the point where that movie spent 10 minutes depicting in real time Kate Hudson learning to play a card game.
What?
Yeah. She spends 10 minutes of that movie.
What game?
It's called Bullshit. It's really charming. It's kind of like in Good Will Hunting when they just take 8 minutes to just tell you a street joke. It's just a story point.
It's not a good movie.
Oh, Minnie Driver, tell us a joke. Okay, I'm going to tell you this joke. All right, once upon a time, and there's no, like, this is a medium that invented
that
the montage.
Also
fucking move past it.
Yeah. Show
a calendar page going like this. Come back and say, oh, Minnie Driver, what a great joke! The Lumiere brothers knew to do that. You fucking forgot it now?
Yes.
Now?
They didn't show the whole horse race.
My life is trickling away.
So does two pair? Does that beat a full house?
She's just
let's go back to the start.
Like, wow, the game of bullshit. You gotta call bullshit when you call bullshit. No, okay, bullshit. And you're supposed to be so delighted by the whole thing, and I just want to.
His voice is like a heart.
Oh no, his voice is like a guy who's trying not to project. He's just doing that. He's just doing that movie.
No, that voice reaches me.
Anybody
All right.
If you don't exhale as you talk, anybody can sound like Matthew McConaughey. It's nothing.
His voice is like a wave covered in icing.
It's like how Christian Slater started his career trying to sound like Nicholson, which is true, by the way.
Yeah.
Which is true, because a friend, my friend Jimmy knows his mother.
Or am I Christian Slater?
Yeah, exactly.
You named my other voice crush. pump up the volume, like Christian Slater. Meow, they, meow. But
know, they're
also
just copies of other guys, because Matthew McConaughey is doing Paul Newman. And
sure. I don't know, really?
You think that? Oh, yeah. Definitely.
But still, that doesn't... I mean, I still appreciate Christian Slater's voice. I think Paul Newman's a million times cooler and sexier than Christian Slater.
I mean, not now, but yeah, right.
I like when Kurt Russell in Big Trouble in Little China is doing John Wayne, and that's great because he's just
really
he just picks one movie to be John Wayne, and that's hilarious. Also, that movie is that holds up.
Yeah. It does hold up. Big Trouble in Little China.
May I make a little announcement really quick?
Uh-oh.
Preggers. No.
Impossible.
Preggers.
Congratulations, Anatoly. You did it. It was pointed out to me that I was a little hard on you last week. I'm sorry. I adore you. And you look great. Look at Wes Anderson in front row. Quick announcement.
Your voice is like an oboe.
Well, he's not...
Anatoly, come on up here. Woo! Look at this Anatoly, every guy I dated in college. Look at this Anatoly, we would listen to Belle and Sebastian. Look at Anatoly, he would tell me he was sensitive. Look at Anatoly, then he was afraid of love.
What the fuck? That was your announcement?
No. The announcement is, everybody here... Dan and I are going through our house and purging a bunch of things. And
oh, are you going to try to sell those fucking picture frames again? This is crazy. He makes so much money. You don't
five for $10. we have a bunch of stuff, as does I'm sure Jeff, and I haven't talked to you about this yet.
I have no stuff.
I know.
I live like a Quaker. I have one chair and no one's allowed to sit.
Dan and I have a lot of furniture. There's a lot of old community stuff, and there's a lot of like extra promotional things. And I'm somebody who loves garage sales. I'm also someone who loves A26LA. Are you guys familiar with A26LA, which supports kids learning how to write? So we're having a Harmontown garage sale, which will basically be Dan and I taking all of our things and putting them in this room. All the proceeds going to A26LA. It's going to happen on March 23rd from 11 to 6 p.m. I'm going to be making a bunch of cakes. We'll have a lot of dirty underwear lined up. Right. Not literally dirty underwear, but a lot of clothes and things. And just a ton of stuff. And if you love Dan or love Harmontown or just love things, come on out March 23rd in support of charity. Everything will be garage sale priced. That's it. Great. End of announcement.
Very nice. Yeah. Very nice.
I don't know.
Yeah. Mitch is going to be donating a lot of his new... He's writing a new script, and he's going to put it on a thing.
Yeah,
all of his ideas, his whiteboards.
You know, all my stuff is brand new. You know, because I just throw away anything that... You know, I sort of live this... I mean, I don't know if it's environmentally sound. We think it is. It's recyclable. Everything... is constantly new in our house.
I mean, I like this jacket.
It's in the trash tomorrow.
You were feeling sexy when you got dressed tonight, right?
What?
You were feeling very sexy when you got dressed tonight. You clearly... I mean,
really?
Yeah,
does it seem that way?
Knock it off!
Sorry.
Dan, wake up. Wake up, Dan. Wake up.
That's nice of you to say.
Oh, you look...
I'd like to pay myself a compliment, but when I woke up from the love of my life punching me in the mouth, I was like, oh, we'll talk about it in the morning, and just put a pillow between us and went back to sleep.
You are the second woman in 41 years that I have physically assaulted in my sleep.
Aww.
That was the third time I've been assaulted by that dance.
My girlfriend Allison, in my 20s, we went to visit my parents in Florida.
Wait, Allison sleeping. With the flat nose? Allison
yeah,
with
yeah.
that broken
yeah.
She dated Elvis yeah. Costello.
We were sleeping in our parents' guest room, and I at the time I was reading a lot of alien abduction books because I was writing a script. That was going to be an alien abduction comedy that I hoped that perhaps Mr. Sandler might read. who knows?
Kevin James as lead alien.
But I was, and I was like half asleep, and you're in that weird fugue state where you think you're awake, but you're asleep or whatever. I rolled over, and like I realized that I was in bed with a gray. There was an alien face.
Yeah.
Like Whitley Strieber alien face staring at me on the pillow next to me. And I went, ah! And I flailed physically. I was like, get this alien away from me! The way you would with an alien, you know? There's an alien laying in bed.
You know who else has had that experience? Everyone who's ever thought they saw an alien, by the way. And, you know what I mean? Like, but anyway, go ahead.
And yes, I flailed, yeah. And in flailing, I my knuckles, like hit. I mean, I hit my lover in the face, getting this alien away from me. And then came to, and my poor girlfriend is going, you... Excuse me, that's not part of the story.
I've never seen anyone sneeze on stage.
It's actually that comfortable.
I know.
I didn't know it was possible to sneeze on stage.
I never thought it was.
It's weird, isn't it? Yeah, I must be allergic to entertainment.
I know.
I've had that theory a long time, but now it's finally proven.
But, you know, what was your name? Elisa?
Allison.
Allison.
Allison
she
McConaughey.
She had a tattoo of a sun in the middle of her back and a half-made mermaid tattoo in the inside of her thigh.
No, you're merging two women. Allison had a sun tattoo on her back. You're thinking of a different person with the mermaid tattoo.
Great.
Who is that person?
Now I know there's another person. I thought it was the same person. I assumed that sun tattoo would also have mermaid thigh tattoo.
That's what you don't understand about women.
I don't
No woman would have both those things.
Sun tattoo on the back girl has Japanese kanji that says strength on her ankle.
That's right.
I think we've all known that.
It was a different time.
And it was her own fault for probing you. Yeah. Right? I mean, that might have been part of it.
Maybe she was an alien. I don't know. Maybe I saw her true form.
That's interesting.
But so there's that's the second time that I've actually hurt someone that I was in bed with.
So like you woke up and your fists made contact.
Yeah, right.
Thank you. Matthew McConaughey reference. He was in the movie Contact.
That's great.
But I've told the story before. About
show's over. Everybody out.
I had a dream once where Bruce Willis was taunting me, and I was fighting Bruce Willis, and I was thankfully. Thank God I was alone at the time, sleeping in a single mattress in my two-bedroom apartment, and in my dream, Bruce Willis was taunting me, and I, again, with the thing where you're like, I can't move my arms, and then you just go, fuck you, Bruce Willis!
And if it was witty taunting, that's how you can tell it wasn't Bruce
smirking.
Willis.
He was smirking.
Right.
Like Capri or Seagram's Golden Wine Cooler smirk. And I just lunged at him and woke up as my fist collided with the plaster wall next to my bed.
No.
Like,
oh,
really hard. And I, the thing that always blows me away about that is the idea that in some way of looking at the universe, our unconscious dream characters, they have a life of their own. They exist because we make them exist. And they're accountable to our wakefulness or sleepfulness. They resent us for being gods that they can't control. They know that they're going to all die no matter what as soon as we wake up.
Which the real Bruce does not know.
One guy in the figment of my unconscious mind, one hero, this Bruce Willis guy in one dream, knowing that he was going to die along with the rest of Dreamworld, like he accomplished this Promethean task. Like he bruised my knuckles. Like he reached out across the threshold between sleep and awake.
Yeah.
And fucked with me.
And won a fight with you.
Like there would be a statue of him built outside of Dream City if those fucking assholes could live past a day.
He hurt someone.
Yeah.
He hurt one of the real people.
Yeah. He'd be the president of Dreams.
Fuck Dream City, because in Dream City they administered that fucking I can't run or walk and the gun doesn't shoot, nothing fucking works drug on you, and so they always win, those fucking Dream City motherfuckers.
Fuck those guys.
Is this a real thing or is this a movie?
Sweetie.
Did I tell you about the dream when I was JJ from Good Times and I was fucking Thelma the whole time?
You get that in every show. It's unbelievable. I mean,
never. It's like it's an unmistakable agenda. Okay, so Amazing
Bruce
Spider-Man
Willis, not the sharpest dude. Apparently, did you read Kevin Smith's book?
No.
Oh, it's amazing.
Kevin Smith talks shit about him.
Oh my God, yeah. And every other sentence keeps saying like, I mean, he's a hero of mine, and what a fucking asshole. And I actually was at a party with him once, and I had like
you were at a party with Bruce Willis.
Yeah, I was my friend Kevin Rooney knows all these guys because he was a comic, you know.
Bruce Willis.
Willis, yeah. So. That whole class of comics knows him, and he walked up, and my friend Kevin was holding
a class of comics.
It's true. It's like 1 year, you know.
There's also a jazz musician somewhere saying like, "Well, you know, Bruce was a jazz musician."
Well, that's his real gift, but. But he walked up to my friend who was holding a cookie, and he wanted to make a joke. And the joke he came up with is, "What do you got there? A donut?" He smirked away. Wonderful! Well, a donut has a hole in the middle, and this is a... Isn't that a crazy story?
I saw Bruce Willis at a bar one time, like when I was like 24 and I was dating a girl who looked enough like Demi Moore to, you can say, that Bruce Willis might have a Demi Moore type.
He's got a type.
Like she had like the kind of like just above the shoulder black bobbed hair, like a similar size, didn't look facially like her. But I was in a bar and in Hollywood, and there was like, it was like some sort of party or something. I don't know what it was. And I was going to the men's room, and like I was standing next to my date, and he saw her from across the room, and did like it was like a Cirque du Soleil act watching him get across the room. There was people in the way, and there was couches, and he was doing front like tumbles and back handsprings, and he was just, like he grabbed like a vine that we didn't know existed in the ceiling and swooped across, and
he went through an air vent. He had to light it with his Zippo.
Yeah. I saw somebody, a German guy with blonde hair, shot the glass, and his shoes were off, and he still made it. And then the final obstacle, and I could kind of see this Tasmanian devil of energy coming, navigating any slight breach in the wall of humanity and furniture that was there. The only thing that was finally in his way was the guy standing right next to her, and he linebackered me out of the way.
No.
Like just
he's got to lay that donut line on her, probably.
Well, she was wearing a skirt, and he couldn't wait to ask, are those pants? Yeah. What are those pants?
What are you wearing? Is that a pantser?
I was at a Hollywood party once.
What's the end of this?
The end of the story is me getting up, and the thing is, he didn't see me. He hadn't made eye contact with me and said, I must destroy this guy. Right. I was just simply a chess piece that was on an adjacent... square that needed to be like knocked away so he could occupy that square. And he just came up to her and just was laying this really like heavy, not charming, just like, hey, like Spreckensy Punim, like look at this memory, you know, this whole face, like you and me, like I'm Bruce Willis. And she was like, she kind of gave him the flick of the shoulder, like go away.
Wow.
And he went like, beep, 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 just shrank down and just cruised off and kind of unfazed, like was off to his next weird non-conquest. But I wanted to go like, hey, fucking fuck you.
Yeah,
like,
no kidding.
fucking California.
I saw him try to eat a tree stump once.
You tried to eat a tree stump?
Timing was better earlier. It's one of these times when it would have been like pew, and then I said, I was at a Hollywood party. I've never interacted with Bruce Willis. I just thought like maybe the dumbest thing would be to try to eat a tree stump.
Well, we have a surprise for you tonight.
Let's bring
him out. Oh my God!
Let's bring him out.
Dan and I.
Hey, hey. Yo, yo, yo. Yo, yo. I'm Bruce Willis. Yo, yo. I'm gonna thrill this. Yo, I'm Bruce Willis from
Die
Hard.
What you doing?
Yo, taking foot by mile yard. Yo,
hey,
Bruce Willis in the house.
I heard you're cool with your ex's new boyfriend.
Thank you.
You must be really open-minded.
Yeah.
Bruce, who are you rapping with? Who is that character?
You bring some people out, and they help you out sometimes. Thank you, Cindy.
You're welcome. I'll be in the back trying to eat all the paper.
Anyway, that's what she does. There's a whole story.
I never realized I didn't have an ending to that Bruce Willis story. I always thought it was enough to say Bruce Willis tried to knock me over.
And actually kind of half did. I was like halfway to the ground before I like recovered. But the thing is, like,
all you know things a good considered, ending? I'd rather be ending? In Philadelphia.
That's really good. No, you know what a good ending to that story
I
would
need
be?
A good ending because
and then he went on to make like 8 horrible movies.
That's true.
Would be
that's
a good.
Seven. Yeah. Seven.
Woody Harrelson gave me a black eye.
Who did?
Woody Harrelson gave me a black eye. We're talking about celebrity interactions.
Who was the black guy?
This is 1853 when you were allowed to give someone a black guy.
Lil Bow Wow.
Just wait, as a Valentine.
What precipitated him giving you a black eye?
Through a series of unimportant events, I ended up at an impromptu basketball game following the premiere of Semi-Pro. And there were 10 people that were really famous, and I was the only unfamous person at the UCB Theater, and they were playing a pickup game of basketball on the stage of the UCB Theater, which was really small, and I was the only girl, and Woody was like, hey, darling, come on. I was like, ah, blah, blah. Yeah, and I walked down. I didn't do that. I looked really cute. I was a little thinner. And I walked down on the stage and played basketball, and Woody Harrelson, I was on the other team, and he elbowed me in the eye. Like, everyone saw him. Like, he didn't do it on purpose, but he...
We don't know that.
No, we don't. I mean, listen, when you're playing a basketball game in the UCB Theater, it's serious. I mean, you do what you have to do to make the fucking shot, I guess.
And I should correct it.
The stakes are high when you're in the show.
Yeah, right.
The famous people that I met, it was a bunch of comics, but everyone was really like, oh my God, Woody Harrelson's here, Woody Harrelson's here. So everyone saw him like elbow me in the eye. And I went to the ground, but I tried to pull it together. But then because it was Woody Harrelson, everyone's like, you're fine, Aaron, right? Because they're worried that the game was going to end because I got elbowed in the eye.
That's terrible.
And Woody was like, hey, darling, did I hit you? And I was like, no! But it, like, oh, he really... I had a black eye for a week because of Woody Harrelson.
The concern was not for a wounded person... Or maybe the only woman on stage, but the celebrity might fly the coop.
Well, I mean, I didn't want to be wounded, but I did for the rest of the night. Everyone saw my face just get bigger and bigger, and everyone was pretending that it wasn't happening.
Because you don't want him to say something like, hey, man, if everyone's going to complain about me busting their eyes, I'll just go.
This seems like coming down here and playing basketball is not too high maintenance.
I definitely...
Yo. Woody Harrelson. Woody Harrelson.
What is he doing with his jaw?
I'm chewing my cud.
Give me some Woody Harrelson rap for God's sake.
Woody Harrelson. Yo, when you rap like Woody Harrelson...
You always stop. I stop when you start
You always
rapping.
Stop. Yeah, you
because,
always
because
stop.
You give me a look like you're done, and then I stop.
I don't give you a look like nothing.
All right.
Get a room!
I give you a look like I'm on fire.
Oh, so I got to look like, get me out of here.
No, I don't know about that.
Okay, now again, I'm not saying that your iced tea and your Vincent Price is totally
You
want
to know what it would sound like
I'm if Woody Harrelson and Sammy Davis Jr. rap together.
Wait.
Because Because, I mean, at least let them introduce themselves subsequently.
Yeah.
I don't know which one you're doing it.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're different sides of his mouth. Look closely. That's Sammy.
That was Woody.
That was Woody.
Woody goes on the left.
That's Woody.
No. My name is Woody Harrelson. I'm here to say I'm from somewhere in the Midwest today. When I rap, I like to chew my mouth and look like I'm chewing from the South. Gotta kind of slur my lips around while I'm rapping on the ground.
Cerebral palsy, Woody Harrelson. Cerebral palsy,
Woody Harrelson. Hey, babe. Spiders crawling out of this closet.
Wait, what is he?
Spooky, ooky.
Yes, this was
creepy
written by
crawlies, babe.
Yeah. You wanted it. You got it.
No. Tonight has been just a field of dreams for me.
And believe me, the last thing I would ever want to do is stop a beat before you were done
but
rapping.
There was a very subtle thing going on there because, you know, Sammy didn't write the songs he sang.
No,
so he was doing a song that clearly Vincent Price wrote.
That was a very subtle piece.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
the
hey,
spiders,
man.
The oops.
It's true. Most people who end up doing bridges, there was a guy who wrote bridges to pop songs, and he was a very horror-oriented guy. Yeah, so when you come in, you have to talk about spiders and coffins.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, he's the best bridge man in town.
Get me.
Hey, kid.
Get me, McClintock.
It's a great song. I love the hook. The verses are great. But your bridge. Can we bring in a professional?
You want
can we
McClintock.
Get McClintock?
You want.
He writes a spooky bridge.
He's been Vincent Price's guy for 20 years.
Yeah, but sir, this is a love song. We're making a love song.
It's about a woman that I saw on a beach.
Yeah, but couldn't that be a coffin or a ghoul?
Kids love a spooky bridge.
Yeah, give the kids what they want. They want the monsters to mash. And they want the ghoulies to ghoulie.
They want a celebrity to do it. Vincent Price, he owned the spooky bridge.
Yeah, and it wasn't because he was Mr. Spooky. It was because McClintock's words didn't need the piano doesn't write the concerto, cocksucker. It's the fucking... You want to work in this town? You want to sell records? You put a spooky ookie in there.
My first attempt at a Woody Harrelson.
But the jaw thing is interesting.
Wait, see, now
you're going to move your mouth around.
You almost went Jodie Foster there.
I don't know if you start
Jeff,
to...
You can
if
do
you start to put your tongue in your cheek, you get a little bit of Cher.
Cher.
Woody Harrelson.
Cher.
Woody Harrelson.
Mitch, you do a spot on Matthew McConaughey, right? Can we see these two guys at a drive-thru movie?
I'd rather try to, and this is, I'm going right at it, but I'd rather show you my Cher. Because that's what you were doing.
What if Cher came to a drive-thru and Woody Harrelson was working the drive-thru? I'll be Woody Harrelson.
Yeah, let's try it. Let's do it.
Welcome to the burger restaurant, ma'am. Can I help you?
Oh, well, I'm Cher, as you know. And I hate those tree people because they killed my husband.
Well, I'm awful.
No, don't. It's over.
Man.
No, I'm giving you the look. It ended. That was it. Yeah.
No, this one's not over. This one is not over. Cher rapped.
Understanding of trees.
I don't care for your till midnight.
What is being, Cher?
We will be here till we'll serve fucking breakfast.
I have dreams just like this.
Are you telling me that?
And I always punch my wife at the
end
of
it. We came so close to Cher rapping. You're kind of, what was your character? A little bit Lily Tomlin.
It's been a while. Actually, as I started that, it was probably what you felt, which is like, wait, who's Cher? It's been a while.
I'm not joking, Dan. You tiptoed into Jodie Foster and your.
Oh,
and
yeah. Well, Dr. Lecter, I'm sorry. Woody Harrelson, I don't understand what you're saying. Well, goddamn, young lady, I'm Woody Harrelson. Well, I'm Jodie Foster.
Oh, you know what? I haven't heard you do in a long time. I love your Matt Damon. You do a good Matt
what?
Damon.
What?
Or is it Schraub? Is it, one of you does Matt Damon.
No.
Well, Wahlberg, I mean Wahlberg.
Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg.
No, that's Schraub.
Oh, fuck. God damn it. That's a goodie. We should get him out here.
I mean, that was my first Woody Harrelson. I'm an outsider artist. I'm not an impressionist.
Yeah.
That was the first time I've ever attempted and nailed a Woody Harrelson.
Woody Harrelson. If we heard Woody Harrelson, we could do it, though.
Woody Harrelson, you just got to move your mouth around a little bit.
That is sling blade.
Yeah. I want some French fry fritters.
No, you look like Woody Harrelson in the last 10 minutes of The People versus Larry Flint.
Yeah,
is what is happening.
Yeah. Or if you had Bell's palsy.
Or just Larry Flint.
Do you know that? Do you think there's any chance that Liam Neeson might rap ever in his life? I mean, because I don't know. I mean, I don't know Liam. He's never. I'm a big fan of his, but I don't know if he's a rapper.
It doesn't matter if you know Liam Neeson. He's going to rap. Liam Neeson. Yo. Yo, I'm Liam Neeson. Yo,
It doesn't matter if you're right or wrong. It doesn't matter if you rap or sing a song. I'm Liam Neeson. I'm from the streets. I'm going to tell you something. You need to hear it. Pay attention, or you'll regret it. I'm Liam Neeson. Don't sweat it. 4 o'clock in the morning, got a beeper on my cell phone going out for an I'm gonna just sling some rock. Doesn't matter if it's down the block. I got ice to sling. Doesn't matter if I sing. I'm a fucking crack dealer. I deal crack. Deal with it. Neeson style. Doesn't matter what it costs. It's just crack. $5.
Sean Connery, Spooky Bridge.
Sean Connery.
Spooky Bridge by Sean Connery.
Coffins with spiders inside. Coming out from your mouth opens wide. Spooky skeletons and ghosts. All kinds of S sounds. Doesn't matter. Don't listen to him. Listen to me. Don't, Sean Connery. What, Liam Neeson? Let's go get a sandwich. It doesn't matter what kind of sandwich you want. That's my line.
Now this was...
It really has been a magnificent evening.
Yeah, this show has crossed over for the first time into the realm of arts.
In fairness, that was right after McClintock had a stroke. You know, and he was still, like, we thought, does he still have it?
McClintock was, in his 80s or mid-80s?
Yeah, he was up there.
I mean,
No, he definitely started phoning it in.
Yeah.
He would send people just stacks of index cards, and what would say, skeleton.
Coffin. Yeah. He also made that deal with Brock's Candies at that point, which was just tragic.
There was that billboard headline that McClintock's gone back to the grave once too many times.
Right.
You know.
And then he did that whole Easter thing for a while.
Oh, my God.
The Cadbury. Yeah. How can we forget?
No, leave him alone.
And then he transitioned to Babe Prom Dresser.
Yo, standard rapper. Just rapping like a rapper. Standard rapper just to play the straight line. Rapping about this, rapping about yours and mine. From the street, and I'm rapping 2 and 3. Gotta rap to the you, gotta rap to the me. Gonna rap about the street experience. Gonna rap to the everything, gonna rap the difference.
A rock moving from a cave. A messiah is reborn. A shroud with a face imprinted on it. Eggs hidden.
I'm trying to figure out who this is.
I don't know who that was.
I think it's Heston.
That was...
Was that Heston?
Was it Heston? Charlton Heston? It was Richard Widmark.
Wasn't that a Widmark?
I think at that stage of his career, there was no A-list people doing his work.
No. He was going back to the Widmarks, people
Those were people who were selling you their CD outside 7-Eleven. It was just with incense and stuff.
It's a shame to see a star fall like McClintock.
Yeah. I'm McClintock, the writer of The Spooky Bridge.
My friend Jim went to meet with Jerry Lewis once to talk about making The Nutty Professor into a musical. And one of the things that Jerry Lewis kept saying is, I've got a prop guy, he's the best. And I think of that when we talk about McClintock. This guy, I'll call this prop guy when we're ready, he's the best.
You haven't seen an umbrella. This guy has an umbrella. Yeah.
We're going to do a Broadway play.
Have you seen the Day the Clown Cried, that big, thick screenplay that exists?
I've never seen the screenplay.
And then
I know
like
about it.
There's a note in the screenplay that Jerry Lewis wrote that says about the shoes, and there's an annotation that says, we need to discuss the shoes with props or something like that.
Well, that's when he found this new prop guy.
Yeah.
You guys ever take a clown class?
I'm willing to. Show us. Take us through it.
I
That sounded like I was about to teach you a clown class.
I thought I was sure that's what was coming next.
This certainly sounds like we're in for a clown class story.
Yeah. Yeah, we'd love to take a clown class. Absolutely.
No. I asked the question because I think most people my age that were theater majors, you have to take a clown class and you have to reduce your personality to one emotion, and that is your clown.
Right. Dingleberry.
Right. Yeah, right.
What was your emotion?
About to yawn or something. That's, you know.
Bemused resignation.
Just an about to yawn clown at all times. That face you make right before your nose starts to flare. Nobody gets this. What? I've been doing this. I traveled with this. And, you know, I've been won one clown competition.
Yeah. I don't think this is totally representative of me, but when I was 17, my clown was like a really careless, clumsy clown. Whereas now...
How'd you come up with that?
It was given to you.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, it's a pretty standard clown. I mean, they're not great with their hands.
Mitch, if you were in a clown class and you had to like very quickly choose your essential clown quality, your
essential clown quality, if it wasn't about to yawn, sleepy.
Sleepy.
Yeah, I think that'd be
Professor
Snoozy. Or actually,
Snoozy.
Too hot would be a good clown. Just constantly like
wedding sweater.
It's too hot. Can you talk as a clown? Is that an option?
You cannot talk as a clown for your final. You cannot talk.
It makes it too hot.
The
a little
Cirque
harder.
Clowns get that one word. They can go meep meep. They can do that, right?
No, no, really.
Yeah. The Cirque du Soleil. When you start the show, and the guy comes out and goes ay ay ay.
Terrifying.
I think I would do Rethinking Christianity. Like, it would be like a clown that was raised Lutheran, say, and or Catholic.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe it's like half the genuflection, and he just stares off. You know, big eyebrows.
All right, so it's that point in the show where usually, for the last 8 years or so, we would usually bring out Spencer
Crittenden!
He's not here.
What?
He's got the week off.
Whoa.
That's right.
Wow.
He was...
Dan punched him in his sleep. You know. Wow. Spencer was watching like Water for Chocolate, and Dan... Dan stabbed him with a butter knife.
We had a conversation about it, and it turns out, hindsight being 2020, Spencer's the only one who was never told, unlike all of us, that he didn't have to do the show if he didn't want to.
Well, who told him that? Why was he...
No one ever told him anything. He just like kind of fell into this thing, and he was doing this thing, and he felt like he had to do it, or else there would be horrible repercussions if he didn't do it. And he wasn't having a good time doing it all the time, and he felt forced to do it. And
we haven't really been up to. I mean, not that there is any like expectations that he puts on us, but we if there were an expectation, we were underneath that expectation.
I'm glad you said that. You should be more focused.
As D&D campaigners, we don't.
Yes, certainly by Gen Con tournament rules,
we don't remember what happens. We play too short a round. Yeah. We all have an inventory full of awesome shit that we've never used.
We're to believe that there's something that he'd rather be doing than playing Dungeons and Dragons on a Sunday night
for free.
I misjudged this.
What
man.
If we like?
I have to
could,
tell
could,
you.
Could we? I mean, we should have had him tailed and see where he's at the batting cages right now.
Yeah. He's playing Magic the Gathering.
It's really not,
at his parents' house.
He doesn't want to do it or anything. He does.
No, he absolutely does. He loves doing it. I think that, but I was abhorred to find out, mortified to find out that he, and I never really thought about it, that he felt like he had to do it. I would never want anyone feeling like they had to do something. Like Kumail texts me. We never had a single conversation about it. Kumail texts me every week that says either I got an early call time tomorrow or I'll see you tonight. It doesn't matter. Jeff always has a reason to if he's not going to be here, it's because he's got some gig, and so we try to replace him. If we didn't, the roof wouldn't necessarily cave in. We haven't not had a comptroller yet, but Aaron comes and goes. Spencer was brought up out of the audience.
Indispensable.
and never, like you put yourself in his shoes and you think, like, he never actually had an opportunity to know whether or not... What if he were to come up in the green room and go, yeah, I don't want to play D&D this week.
Would you like to play? We can play something else.
There was that moment in last week's show, I think, where he said, like, why did you guys bring me up? Because we keep bringing him up and then not talking to him for a 10 or 15 or sometimes 20 minute span.
Right.
And, you know, it's like he has every right to cater the show to whatever he wants to get out of it, you know. So.
Yeah, I don't think there should never be a single person up here who's bummed out to be up here.
I'm a little sad right now that he's not here, only because I love Spencer.
Well, now it's withdrawal. It's like there's like a thumb being pulled out of our mouth.
And also his little table and his microphone.
It's sad. We have to on the fly. We have to come up with it because we've also our show is dependent on Spencer as a closer. So we're just as guilty as anybody of like.
I've got a feeling there's going to be some rapping involved.
Hey, let's call him. Why don't we call him?
Call him up.
But call him. We'll put him on speakerphone. Say, you have to be really quiet. And we'll say, hey man, we just ended the show early, and we just thought we missed you. We just thought maybe you and I could just play some D&D.
My feeling was
Aaron's here.
I'm just coming up with this now. We bring up someone from the audience. That needs a problem resolved. I'll sit at Spencer's table, and I wouldn't call it dungeon mastering because there's no dungeon involved. But we'll walk through helping them solve their problem.
Okay, and I add a pitch to that? I
mean, sure.
Maybe
you can replace that pitch. That was a bad pitch.
I mean, I don't know how easy this would be because we won't have the character sheets, but we can remember enough because we don't really know our character sheets all that well anyway. That you go over there, sit down. I play the Spencer D&D intro music, and you Ice-T Dungeon Master a little campaign here. You can make up all the
it
new
makes
characters.
Sense.
They can be new characters. We could pick a new character.
It could be a dream sequence.
Yeah, like you could try your hand at Ice-T Dungeon Master. Or is that too heavy an improv?
Well, it also gives you the advantage that next time you talk to Spencer, you can say, "Don't worry about it. It went better than it's ever been." You know, and then maybe Spencer. Will be
I don't want to make a mockery of his domain.
No,
of course.
Oh, I see.
I don't want to like use your characters because we don't have the character sheets and all that.
No,
stuff.
No, yeah. So we can make up new characters. We could do.
Right.
The thing would be a shallow mockery of what Spencer does very well.
We're all right. First step is who in the audience? Somebody's already raising their hand. Who's this young man?
Eric.
Oh, hi, Eric. Do you want to come up here? I was going to ask, who has herpes?
Eric, you can sit there. Yeah, great.
I guess.
No, I'll sit there. Eric, why don't you come sit up here because so people can see you. I'll sit down there. They know what I look like.
How's it going?
Hello, Eric.
Hey. So I had a book signing here like an hour before Harmontown, and it was fun.
Nice. So first of all, I think first thing we should do is try to guess your problem.
I said, yeah, I wrote a comic book called Loki, Ragnarok, and Roll.
Is this just some cheap plug you came up here to shill your own shit?
No.
We're friends with Eric. Eric was at my birthday party. We're friends with Eric.
Well, the problem is that nobody came, really. That was bad. I had some friends from the show here that came. Like, no
all right.
Well, okay, now I'm sorry. That was cold of me. What's the name of the book?
Oh, it's called Loki, Ragnarok, and Roll. It's like a heavy metal Norse mythology thing.
That sounds great.
Thanks. Yeah, it's selling well. It's doing well, like, nationally, but, like, you know, LA is kind of, it's a little bit jaded. There's a lot of stuff to do on a Sunday.
So. It's a tough market, man.
Yeah.
When I was your age, I'm judging from the lack of pores in your skin that you're about half my age.
I've had work done.
I worked in comic books.
Yes, it's got to make
you can only
you know who would have bought one of those? Spencer.
I actually brought one for him and put it on his chair.
Really?
The only day he's not here, so.
Look, we're gonna have to get through this without Spencer. Stop bringing his name
up.
It hurts too much.
All right, so you guys are gonna have to invent new characters on the fly, and this is the adventure of. Sorry, what was your name? Eric.
Eric. Yeah.
Eric what?
Esquivel.
Eric Esquivel.
Dan, do you want to give us like race or class? Like,
yeah,
you
give us
you want to throw
dwarf, orc, human.
Nice.
Eric.
I'll be a dwarf fighter, let's say.
Okay, dwarf fighter. Aaron, you're an orc cleric. And Mitch, you're a human.
I'm a human. Maybe I work for the DWP or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Human civil servant.
Yes, great.
He's a half-elf resources.
Yeah.
All right.
And my salary just went up, obviously.
And Eric, you're just part of the story. You're like you're like an objective. We'll involve you in a second. Okay.
How are you?
Ice-T is dungeon mastering. Your intrepid party has been traveling for several days across the lands of Galgafor. You trod, hoping that no encounters will occur. Finally, campfire after campfire, you sleep the sleep of the damned. When you wake up, you're ready to go again. And you do. So you walk, and you come upon a comic book store. It seems like there's nobody there. You look around, and it confirms your suspicions. There's nobody there. It's empty. It's not personal. It's business. So begins your adventure. I'll start the combat, or whatever you choose to do. Based on my roll of initiatives, this has been Ice-T introducing Dungeons & Dragons.
Nice.
Bitch. All right. I put it at Jeff's turn.
I approach the door to the comic book store.
You approach the door to the comic book store. It seems to be locked with a device.
I take my my great sword and I try to jimmy the door open.
Now hold on, you just approached. It's Aaron's turn. It's nothing personal.
That wasn't the.
It's just business.
That was a standard action. That wasn't the full move action.
I guess. Yeah.
All right, yeah.
You were 10 feet from the door.
Mr. T, I'm sorry. It's not...
Mr. T, motherfucker! What?
Mr. Ice-T. Mr. Like, sorry.
Yeah. All right. God damn.
So it's not personal.
All right, Aaron, you observe Jeff going up to the door, trying to unlock it.
Is that my turn?
Yeah, it's your turn. No, I'm asking you what to do. What you want to do.
I detect magic on the door.
Or waving your arms in a magical manner. You sense that the door has an enchantment spell on it. It could be some kind of magical glyph. It could cause damage upon opening. But you don't know what type. Okay, Mitch...
Well, you know, I've got the DWP truck out front, and and you know, I could just say the city wants to come in and check the pipes because that's the kind of shit we do with the DWP.
You call that through the door?
Yeah.
To who? You don't see anybody.
I do see one guy out there.
You don't tell me who you see.
Looking guy. I don't tell you that.
I'll tell you who you see.
Okay.
It's an empty comic book store.
Yeah. Boy, it looks like...
Do you want to roll a perception check?
First thing I do is I turn to the cleric and I say, what's going on here? They sell them low-key comic books? Then...
What's your perception?
My perception? What I see through the crack?
Pick a number between one
and
30. No,
just say a number.
Oh, I perceive 12.
You see that there is a comic book store employee inside. His name looks like his... Well, you can't tell a name from looking.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he catches your eye.
Yeah, it looks like his name is Buzz, but I would have no way of knowing.
You see him and he looks at you and he's like, okay, Eric, you're inside the store. They're not with you. You can't talk to them. You can't see them. You can't do shit. It's nothing personal. It's business.
I say to my ocelot companion, Chunky,
Chunky says, what?
I'll tell you what, Chunky. Remember in the ice caverns of Strumplemunts?
Yeah.
When you climbed through that small crevice to find the key and unlock us out of that prison?
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. I want you to climb through the mail slot, because you're perfect mail slot ocelot size, to climb in there and see if you can find some way to undo this glyph.
What's your animal husbandry?
I'm a plus seven.
Chucky moves through the mail slot with adeptness and precision. You see his tail wag out of sight as he disappears through the mail slot. I put it in Aaron's turn. Be mindful of your surroundings. Because... Aaron, what are you going to do?
I'm just bummed out that I did better in that move of D&D than I've done the entire time as my other character. Why am I more invested in this new dwarf character?
Aaron, you observe this ferret go through the slot.
Ocelot Chunky.
Ocelot shit.
I use speak to animals.
I
speak to the ocelot. And ask him to let me in.
Okay, cool. You speak to the ocelot. The ocelot says, I'm inside, so...
Let me in. Let me in.
What's your...
100. 100. I've been playing for 45 years.
The ocelot, you hear scurrying and scampering upside the door side. Scampering of claws on aluminum. It seems rodential, but you can't be sure.
Rodential?
But I know it's him, so it...
Well, you don't know shit.
Sure. Not...
All you know is you're outside a door.
So...
That's not personal.
But because my intelligence is zero,
business.
I forgot that I...
Sorry, what? So you telling me an ocelot went through the mail slot? Damn. You people can keep this city. Shit. You hear the scurrying after a brief bit of business... Nothing personal.
Just
a clack and a latch, and the door egresses, opening wide its doorness to your surroundings. The door's open.
I call Chunky back to my shoulder where he's safe.
Hold on. It's Mitch's turn. Mitch, you saw an ocelot go through a mail slot, door open.
It was confusing. I think I go in and I say, guys, let's keep our eye on the goal and not get sidetracked, browsing, flipping through, you know, buying like
Mr. Burns.
You always tell us what to do.
Yo, as soon as the door opens, six ogres start shooting arrows.
What?
You didn't ask.
Yeah.
You didn't know. All you know is six ogres in the nonfiction section.
Roll my evasion.
I'll roll your evasion when your arrows come at you. I need you to all roll initiative. I'll roll it for you. Shit. Oh, y'all got low initiative. Ogres got high initiative. Arrows coming from everywhere. Three coming at Jeff. Two at Aaron.
Yeah.
One at Mitch. Of the three coming at Jeff, one hits. Six damage.
Shh, fuck.
Aaron gets hit by one of her arrows. The other arrow misses Mitch. It flings off your shoulder like a flea on a brick. Flea was on a dog.
No, yeah, I get
and the
it.
Dog walked past a brick.
Yeah.
And the
yeah.
flea took the calculated risk.
Yeah.
Shut up.
And the flea took a calculated risk of trying to transfer itself. Maybe it wasn't having luck with the flea business on the dog. So it jumps to the brick because it can't tell a dog from a brick visually. Jumps onto a brick. Get no blood, no dog blood. Doesn't matter. Sorry.
Well, since they seem to be kind of face blind, I guess I try to convince them that we're ogres too. Mm-hmm.
That's how you want to spend your turn? Thinking about shit?
No.
I advise against it. I don't usually dip in, but it's not a wise use of your turn.
Just because Mitch works for DWP, he has a huge intimidation and bluff ability.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you got. That's
how I got the job. The DWP.
What's your willpower?
I would.
3?
16.
All right. And you doing what?
I'm convincing the ogres they're on our side.
You're saying what? Tell me. You got to make your case.
I'm saying, let's shoot Eric.
You don't.
No, I'm not.
Who's
saying
Eric?
That. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, hey guys, we were just sent over from the main building, and they are you guys ogres? Because we're ogres, and we're supposed to join you guys.
What's your charisma?
Out.
What's each of your charismas? I want to know. Jeff's.
I'm a 12.
Aaron.
100.
Mitch.
I'm up there. I'm at 26.
All right, hold on. I got a lot of calculations to make.
Yeah.
All right, the ogres seem to agree. They look at each other, and they're like, okay. They speak ogrish.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they seem to relax. When the lead one who has plumes of feathers on his head, and he's got
that's Gary.
Skull bones on his head.
That's Gary.
He comes over.
With the feathers on his head?
Looks over at you.
Gary.
He knows you. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
He says, come on in.
Come on in.
You're all ogres?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Come on in.
Hey,
we
got to borrow some arrows.
All right, he lets you come in. He closes the door behind you. He latches it with magic. And some hobbits come out outside the door, and they're trying to get in, but they can't get in.
Yeah, well, we're closed.
That just goes to emphasize the threshold you've crossed. Lesser heroes have failed. Business. All right, you look around. You see Eric sitting behind a table. He's got his comic book. It's called Loki. It's got Unglots above the K. It makes no sense.
It's metal, man. It's metal.
It may be. It's a misappropriation of a...
Of an Unglot.
Of an ancient linguistic device. You get the picture. It seems like he wants you to think his comic is metal. But Unglot's above a consonant? I don't know. Still, he's sitting there. He's got a stack of them. He's got Sharpie pens, like paint color.
I go up to the Loki comic book and I do a perception check on it, or detect magic or something.
You see, it's about 33 pages with ads. There's splash pages. The art looks good. I don't know. It's stylized, but still clean.
I look up from texting my mom, telling her the signing's going really well, and I wave.
The lettering is legible.
I say to Eric, "Is there? We were told on our last mission that there was a scribe who put secret magical codes inside texts." And we were sent in this direction. Do you know anybody like that hides secret magical messages inside books?
He has no fans, two thumbs, and he's right here. That joke doesn't work at all. Yes, yes, it's me. Yeah, yeah.
No, for me, I'm a dwarf with low intelligence. I'd laugh as hard as I've ever laughed at that joke.
He has two thumbs. I get that. Because we all have two thumbs, but he was pointing at him. Jesus Christ.
I call my editor immediately and hand the phone to you.
Okay. The two of you are watching this happen. You think they might have Asperger's.
We knew that was a risk when we came to a comic store.
What's your perception, Aaron?
I think we know what my perception is.
100. Yeah. Okay, so you sense no one else does. There's a green gas coming down from the vents. It's coming down like slowly at first. No one notices, but you notice.
Maybe Doug Benson's shooting a podcast upstairs.
Nice. 20 experience points. That's good. That's good podcast shit. I like that. It's cross promotional. It's business. It's what I like. I just want to take a moment aside to tell everybody that doesn't know, I hate the personal.
Right,
I enjoy
C-corp,
business.
Right? Didn't you just recently incorporate? You're a C-corporation?
I graduated with an MBA in business, non-personal business.
Seems like it.
I loathe the personal.
Yeah.
And I applaud the business.
Is that what attracted you to show business?
Yeah, because it's a business. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It's not about personal show.
I examine my surroundings and look for staircases that might lead.
Oh, okay, we're back in the game.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
I'll ring that bell. Ring-a-ding-ding, motherfucker. Okay,
That's the bell. That's the bell.
All right.
Okay. That's his bell.
Sorry, I don't mean to take charge.
I look around for a way to get upstairs. And
but I'm the dungeon master.
I understand. You're doing a great job.
Sorry.
Mr. T.
Okay.
Mr. Ice.
Jesus Christ, Ice. Man. Your character's going to be fucking hanging from a thread, you know? It's like running around inside a fictional universe I control, talking shit. Precarious position.
I'm not saying you're Mr. T like B.A. Baracus. I'm saying I'm the
you're
Mr.
addressing me
Mr.
formally.
Ice-T.
Yeah,
Mr.
I get
Ice-T.
It. I get it.
But I see that probably that's something you probably get a lot and don't like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you ain't the first to tread in their territory.
Has anyone ever said that you sound a little bit like Vincent Price sometimes?
What's your move, man?
I look around for a way to get upstairs. Are there stairs or some sort of way to get to where the gas is
emanating? Moving
your
eyes around in a visual manner, you take in your surroundings. You see that there are three flights of stairs, one north, one south, and one east.
I send Chunky the Ocelot up the eastern one and because he has great stealth.
Okay, you spend a turn looking shit. Aaron? Ocelot's at the ready, though. He's at the ready.
Thank you, T.
Aaron?
Because I see the gas, I cast a painter's mask. And then I start running up the north stairs, and I look back at Mitch, because we have that pact from so long ago.
What else we just see each other?
I know, right?
Yeah. Hi, you guys.
Okay, you all need to understand turn-based combat. You cast a spell. As I understand it, Painter's Mask takes one full round and it has a manual component, meaning you wave your hands, and a physical
mask,
component.
Painter's Mask, also known as magic chalk. Or
you have a lizard tail in your pouch that makes it possible to cast that spell. So you do. From all of you that are observing her, if anyone's looking, what you see is a mystical astral painter's mask appear over her face as she runs up the north stairway. Now, she's trying to look back, but I need to check your agility because you're talking to other people while you're doing it.
Okay, let me look
you
at my
trip
feet.
And fall on the stairs. Mitch, it's your turn. The gas is still coming down.
The gas is coming down.
So all the ogres are starting to look around at each other.
There's
like,
another.
These might not be ogres.
Oh, that's a good point.
They're starting to look at each other.
That's good.
Okay.
Mitch.
So I'm going to.
Hurwitz.
Well, I don't know that that's this guy's
creator
name.
Of Arrested Development.
Well, I mean, he's working
Netflix,
for the
Netflix, motherfucker.
Okay, well. we had a meeting about doing a spin-off, very briefly, just called Order. So I go up. I go up the. There's another staircase, and I think
you're gonna
like that. I thought there were three.
There's three total.
Three total.
Yeah.
But Aaron's up one.
Yeah.
And I go up the third, and I use my special walkie-talkie to call a guy named Chet McClintock.
Oh, shit.
Who creates a bridge, you guessed it, from one stairway to another.
Nice. All right.
I don't even call him directly. I call him back. It's a callback.
You call McClintock.
I call back.
The writer of Spooky Bridges.
Yeah. Yeah.
He enters through the skylight. But first, there's a rap by Robin Williams. Otherwise, there can't be a bridge.
Yeah.
There's nothing to bridge if there's no rap.
Oh. I'm climbing up, and it sure seems windy. Oh, I'd give anything to be back with Mindy.
What was the name of that movie?
Toy.
Patch Adams.
Patch Adams. I tell you, I tell Aaron to go Adams, but not in the style with the big red nose like Patch.
That didn't work.
A thousand spiders climb out of the eyeball and spooky fire up your face and nostrils. Skeletons come out of the dark coffins and bats hang out their asses. Climb up their assholes with rats and glasses. Everybody's spooky with blood and guts. Oh, shit, I just bust a nut.
That's Hermantown, everybody. Thank you for coming.
That wasn't a good ending.
It's not personal, Dan.
We need Spencer back. We need Spencer.
Spencer, we miss you. Let's hear it for Spencer, everybody. Aaron McGathy, Mitch Hurwitz.